and welcome to Paper MKE. This is our episode one. I'm your host, Tony, and I'm joined and accompanied by three of my friends. I'm going to kind of introduce them one by one. First, I'm going to start off with you, Jeff. Go ahead and say hello.
Hello, hello.
Also accompanied by Josh as well.
Hello.
And then I also have my dear friend, JB. He's also very lanky.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So kind of the introduction of what I want to talk about is what this podcast is going to be. I think there's a lack of talk of just overall paper competitive Magic that's existing right now, and that's due to the pandemic, but also kind of bringing Magic back away from Arena as a whole. And not that we won't refer to Magic Online, but primarily our focus is going to be Legacy, Modern, Limited, Pioneer, if that still is going to exist after, and then maybe dabble a little bit into EDH, anything like that, and maybe Pauper if something comes across there. But realistically, our primary focus is going to be just Legacy and Modern. So I guess this is the start of episode one. So welcome, guys. Jeff, start off just by letting people get to know you a little bit. Just start off with your favorite card and what your favorite year of Magic is.
So my favorite card has actually always been Raging Goblin. It was like one of the first cards I ever opened. I have some signed even.
Nice.
It's like always the first card I always went to when playing. My favorite year of Magic probably wouldn't have been when Original Zendikar came out. I was a huge Boros player. I really liked playing Step Links into GOP. It just felt good. It felt like fair Magic, but not fair Magic.
Yeah, that was a good, I mean, honestly, I think that's like the highlight of Standard.
Oh, agreed, 100%.
Those years.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun during the whole... I mean, are you talking like pre or post Jace?
Before Jace, of course. Come on now.
That was like super Standard, right?
That was like, there were so many valid decks back then. It was nice. Like, it felt like a healthy format. Like, you could pick any archetype and still go to a tournament and, like, do good because, like, they were all viable decks. Like, you had Jund, you had Control, you had Boros. There was even Five Color for a little bit.
Yeah, those are the days. That's kind of my initial introduction to competitive Magic, actually.
Yeah, that was right around the first time we met you. Yeah. It was probably right around, or Shards Black, I want to say. So right before that.
Yeah. Yep. All right, Josh, what's your favorite card and what year is your favorite of Magic?
My favorite Magic card has quickly become Brazen Borrower.
Nice.
That card's just so good. I like using the B meme or like B emoji to meme with you guys and on my friends. It's just the quick card is proven very effective in everything that I play. So it's easily slotted into my favorite Magic card. I try to slot it into everything.
Same.
Favorite year of Magic. I will say that when Return to Ravnica first came or like was released, when that standard came through, I like started playing that standard and I felt like there what rotated at that time.
Ixalan was legal. I believe it was Amonkhet, so we didn't have
Dominaria.
No, it was Dominaria that rotated. Yep, because all the Teferis were gone.
Because I remember playing Jaylight Ranger I remember playing Jaylight Ranger with against Crackling Drakes, which is in that.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
I think we were together.
That was like my rebirth back into competitive Magic was that standard, which wasn't like 2 years, like even long ago. That was like what, 2 years ago, 3 years
feels
ago?
Like six, but yeah, it was like 3 years ago.
That was post like 2020 Magic.
Right.
Yeah.
I was like,
no, it wasn't 2020.
That was like 2018.
Pre. What I meant was that was before 2020 Magic was a thing.
That like brought me back into the competitive scene. Before that, I was a primarily big EDH player. For the longest time, I would have said my favorite Magic card is Gitrog Monster, but now that I'm a Spike, Brazen Borrower is my favorite Magic card.
Nice.
Of course, Throne of Eldraine, you know, the most powerful set ever.
It's pretty strong. I mean, I'd love to go into that one, and I got a laundry list of all the best, what the best sets are, and I think Throne's got to be in the top three.
At least, like, format-defining in terms of, like, really shaking everything up.
All right, JB, give me your favorite card and your favorite year.
So, my favorite card is probably Tabernacle.
Oh my god, I knew you were going to say that.
It's a free tax card, and you can manipulate your deck with shitty lands really easily. And I have a lot of fun just making people
miserable.
When they don't know what it does, they stare at it and they go, "What does that mean?" And I'm like, all your creatures are gone. Just pick them up and throw them in the trash. And I've always liked the card. I would say my favorite tournament Magic time would probably be Legacy right before... God, what's that set? The one
Innistrad?
That had... Yeah, Innistrad. You know.
Before Innistrad?
Yeah,
Innistrad...
I think...
Before Delver took over.
Innistrad fundamentally changed Legacy.
It did.
Yes, it did.
That's what he's saying, yeah.
I think it was a lot more calm back then as well, because there wasn't as many big tournaments for Legacy, so it was a little easier to bring your janky whatever pile of trash you had.
There's like a Reddit following to play that format, like pre-Innistrad Legacy.
Yeah, I love that format. I'd kept up with it a little bit, but I never really like got into it because it's harder to find people in person to play with, and that's what I want to do.
You want to see your opponent's rage.
Just
tabernacle and they'll go, I mean, during that era, like Merfolk and Goblins, well, I think Goblins is actually making its way back, but Merfolk was fairly decent until like 2013, 2014. I think that's like the death of those decks, to be honest. Or whenever Deathrite Shaman came out, is a lot of tribal decks kind of just died on the spot there.
It's just a bunch of people playing Elves, Merfolk, or Goblins, pick your tribe or color.
They also had, there was a point where Moat was playable, and it is not playable anymore. Hasn't been playable for 8 years.
Fly for free now. Yeah.
I had a moat once. That was a good time.
Nice.
What about you, Tony? What's your favorite Magic card here?
It's probably unsuspecting, but it's Sun Titan. I don't know why I have such an affinity for that card. It has a small ability to be played in EDH, but it's like never been good compared to the other five Titans, or to the other four Titans. Like Inferno, Frost, Primeval, and Grave Titan all saw way more standard play, and they definitely saw more like internal play. And I don't know. Like, I think all five Titans are still in like the Legacy Cube on MTGO, but I don't really know.
They are.
I know Primeval is for sure. Inferno and Frost, definitely. Grave is there, and I don't know if Sun Titan's still lingering around. I'm sure.
Sun Titan sees a lot of EDH play. A lot of EDH play.
He's got combo potential with like Saffy and all those cards.
He's also just straight up value.
Yeah, he is.
Right.
Yeah,
besides the fact that Primetime is banned, Sun Titan's probably the most played Titan in EDH.
No, I'd say Grave Titan over that, because you can combo with Grave Titan a lot easier.
They're both combo. They're both great. Like, you see those, but as far as Sun Titan, like, I have a place in my heart for that card, but it's just never good. And I'm just waiting for the day that it becomes good, but I don't know when. That will ever be.
That brief moment in Standard it had was good, though. That Esper control deck was a lot of fun. I had that deck with Elish Norn and all that in there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
That deck was a lot of fun.
That Standard was dumb.
Blade Splicer, but then Delver just took over with Geist of St. Traf.
Yep.
Yeah, if you didn't have Liliana in like turn two or turn three, turn three, you're just dying to Geist of St. Traf, and you had to have the removal spell to kill the Delver, and then have the Liliana to deal with the Geist of St. Traf in that era. I guess let's get into our main topic. We have a spoiler season amongst us right now, and I've kind of asked everybody on the cast to kind of bring their five cards they want to talk about. Today is May 26th, 2021, and we are going to be talking about Modern Horizons 2. So far from the set, what I've seen is a lot of spice, and I don't know where the format's going to land, but we'll kind of get into the cards that we think are going to be good. But what I'm seeing now in this format is a lot of things are entering, so all the current archetypes that are good may not be good going forward.
Mm-hmm. I mean, isn't that the whole point? That's kind of what Modern Horizons did originally.
But Modern's also supposed to be a format where, like, you're supposed to, like, be able to invest in a deck and not have to worry about, like,
I think that's
losing true. That. I agree it's changed. I don't know if it's a good change, though.
Right, agreed.
It just makes the format more expensive. It makes, like, the risk a lot higher.
I think it's scary to invest in Magic cards now, because Wizards is going to keep printing like better cards every year, and they're pushing more sets every year. And now look how many of your staples in your Magic deck are like new cards. Like, I mean, it's good to invest in like lands or whatever, but I think your like playable cards are going to be continually rotating for like ever now.
Yeah, when it comes to like format staples, that is, the definition has definitely changed. Like, when I used to think, when the inception of Modern, when it first started, and the, like kind of the following years after, everybody knew kind of like the primary archetypes and like what to get into, and then your land base for that. The land base is still kind of true, and we've had upgrades over the time with either Triomes or, you know, any forms of fetches, if you will. But overall, a lot of things have just changed.
Right.
I don't think of, like, Delver's not Modern playable, but it's definitely Legacy playable. But I don't think that, like, I would consider that card a staple, and it would be very alarming to see what the next iteration of a better Delver would be.
Right.
So, and then when you think, I mean, Delver came out, what, 2012, 2011 in the Innistrad era, and that thing is still just humming through Legacy. But we've seen so many cards come and go throughout Legacy's like era. You know, like even Tarmogoyf, like one of the greats, it's still hanging on by a thread, but it's nowhere near the powerhouse that it once was. So when people invested initially into Tarmogoyf thinking they were going to be these huge, like, oh my God, one, the reprints kind of happened, which is a good thing because nobody wants a $1,000 card existing in the format.
Right.
But on top of that, it's just, I just remember seeing Tarmogoyfs everywhere, and now it's like very fringe decks still play it. And sometimes it's not even a four of, whereas if you go back to that era, it's like it's a four of in those formats.
Even just like recently, I asked you guys in our private chats, like, hey, what if I played Delver but without Delver? Like, I've had the thought. So it's not far-fetched to see that, like, we eventually move away from it. But that was probably a poor choice now, but we'll see.
Mm-hmm. So my thing is, we talk about how Standard is not played anymore in paper, right? No one ever shows up to your local FNM and really wants to play Standard.
I mean, that's like true, but there was always like, when I was following I would bounce between local stores. I saw at least one store we had 8 people to show up for Standard, which
you gotta also remember that's pre-COVID though. Like, now that we've spent pre-COVID,
right?
A year and a half on Arena, like, there's no point to play Standard in paper anymore.
So
if I'm hiring the first FNM, there's no way it's going to be Standard, in my opinion, right?
No.
So you're looking at Standard going away in paper. So now you have a replacement, which is Modern and maybe Pioneer. Like Tony said, you know, it might be popular, it might not be popular. But I see Modern as the replacement for, like, the get into the game format.
From a competitive standpoint, absolutely. I think that's where people are going. Yeah. If you're talking competitive, most people have either invested into a Modern deck at some form. And when it comes to Legacy, if you started playing Magic when Arena came out, it's very unfortunate, but you just don't have the ability. I mean, you could shell out that coin for the potential deck that you would want. But when things change so frequently in that format, especially in the last couple of years of Legacy, where it's just been like, oh, well, you need Volcanics this week, and whoops, we printed Oko. Now you need to go get Trops. Oh, okay. Well, Oko's banned. Astrolabe's banned. Okay, where are you going next? It's like,
welcome to my life.
Yeah, I mean, that's the majority of players, and get me wrong, it's some form of like,
you have to
I don't want to
play Legacy.
Yeah, but again, with these like cards that are coming out, especially with like Modern Horizons 2 coming in the next couple weeks, it could have the potential that whatever cards come out could invalidate decks. And if you invested into, you know, a blue white deck, and all of a sudden that blue white deck's no longer like viable, then you're kind of like SOL, you know.
But that's what I'm saying, is like, the blue-white deck is still going to have some cards that are playable, but some are going to rotate out. And that's a great example of what Standard used to be, is it was about like 500-ish bucks for like a good deck. And now you have cards that would rotate out consistently because new cards were coming in and there were cards getting tossed out. So you had that, and now you're looking at like a Modern deck that you're typically looking at like 800 for like an okay deck. And I think that's where, like, in a financial sense, it's the same as what Standard used to be.
Sure. I mean,
in the worst of Standards, right? Like,
yeah, 500 was expensive for a Standard deck. Like, yeah. I'm thinking, like, you're thinking Standard format where it was like Hunt Manas and Thragtusk, where your deck was like six, in Olivia's, where your deck was 16 Mythics. Like, yeah, that's when an expensive Standard, but typically when Standard's been great, it's when the uncommons and the commons have been incredibly playable. Mm-hmm. Like, and you can kind of go back from format to format, but even with like Siege Rhino never broke like $4. That card was always cheap, and all the cards surrounding it were like really cheap. It was like Corsair of Kruphix, like all those cards were cheap, and those were really like, not only that there was fetches in that format, but those were incredibly highly played formats, just because you could go from deck to deck without spending, you know, $400 to go to the next deck.
Right, because everyone was spending so much money to open fetches or whatever. Like,
that too.
Everything from cons was dirt cheap.
The good thing going on with Standard right now, though, is that with them printing so many different versions of cards, like, just regular versions of cards now are super cheap. Like, so Standard decks now are like around like $100.
Your like Standard booster pack doesn't, like, your draft Standard booster pack doesn't even have cards you can play in your Standard deck sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair too, with the Mystical Archives.
Yeah. Right. So like, I think Wizards knows that no one's playing Standard anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They gotta move these products.
Right.
So if they continue to make more products that release in the way that we have, like the special booster, you know, the collector's packs with these sets like Modern Horizon, wouldn't it do the same thing to push prices down on modern cards that are playable?
I think anything that's not like collector booster exclusive is going to be dirt cheap from this set, at least for the first couple weeks.
And that's the way it should be.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is suddenly what you had for standard, where everything was dirt cheap except for like two or three pieces, you're going to have the same for modern as things rotate. And so it's going to turn into something that's like the new standard.
Accessible.
Yeah.
As long as like the things that are being printed are actually played.
This is also what people want to play. So like, yeah. I think like that's a good way to do it. But let's talk about the cards.
All right, man. I'm into it. All right. So Modern Horizons 2 comes out, what, roughly 2 weeks from now? They've been kind of rolling out the spoiler. I think by this Friday, the entire spoiler will be out, maybe next Friday. But I know they had to delay this stuff, but I think spoiler season is all the same. But I guess we're all looking at the same cards together, and we'll start off with, did I put this on my list? I think Imperial Recruiter.
So the order it's going to go in is my cards, Jeff's cards, Josh's cards, and then Tony's cards. So
okay.
Imperial Recruiter was my first choice because I wanted to talk about how it might fit into humans. But I was taking a look at like humans decks before this, and I saw most cards I wouldn't want to put this in its place. I feel like there's too many cards that are built to keep the aggressive nature of that deck going, where I don't want to go digging for one random human in modern because they don't have as much like impact when they hit the table like they do in Legacy.
Do they play Recruiter of the Guard?
That's in the Legacy version. They play Recruiter of the Guard, but it's not a humans deck in that sense. And Recruiter of the Guard is probably much stronger because it can get cards like Flicker Wisp. This cannot. Or Elite Spellbinder, like some of those new cards. The fact that it's power makes it a lot less versatile.
Mm-hmm. I think this is not a bad card. It'll definitely find a home somewhere. I don't think humans is the home. If we're talking modern and specific, when I put my list together, I thought specifically with Legacy in mind, so I didn't put this card on my list. But this will definitely find a home in modern somewhere. I can see it in a combo deck.
I was going to say, doesn't this just grab Ballista?
Right.
Yeah, well, both cards do, but this being legal and modern, it definitely grabs Ballista.
But so that's my problem is like, so what are you trying to fit this into if it's not into a human shell? What do you want?
Naya Collected Company.
Yeah, Naya Collected Company, Ballista, Heliard
combo. It can go get Spike Feeder, which is a huge thing because for whatever reason, Spike Feeder is a 0/0. It's got a lot of versatility that way. Yeah, so you would kind of splash that.
Okay, that's.
I think it'll be in a combo deck. Jeff, you're thinking too fairly.
Yeah, like, yeah, I know.
JB, you're thinking too fairly.
Close enough. But yeah, I guess that's my problem is like I instantly thought like humans and I thought, oh, where will this go when you just want to slam a Mantis Rider on turn 3 instead?
Like, this can go grab a Kiki Jiki. Like, don't forget that it's for whatever. It has potential somewhere else. And like, let's pretend for a second that maybe Splinter Twin were to come off the list or off the ban list. Like, this can go grab Deceiver Exarch. I don't know if you would play that in that deck. It just has a different home than humans. I think people initially think humans because of Recruiter of the Guard. This also can grab Skyclave Apparition, which, again, this card might be a lot better than humans.
Is Skyclave a 3/3?
No, it's a 2/2.
Oh, it is a 2/2.
It's a 3-minute 2/2. Yeah. Again, it's one of those. I mean, the reason why the Recruiter of the Guard is played in Legacy Death and Taxes is because it has the ability to go get your Silver Bullets, your Thalias, and whatever you may need in any situation, like Spirit of the Labyrinth. But this card, for example, can't get that because of the power aspect. But
it's also kind of it's card advantage too.
Yeah, like, and you can chain them if you ever want to. It's got potential. I just don't know where it's going to be. And again, with all these cards flooding into the market, I'm hoping that like a Hogak effect doesn't happen where everything kind of gets shadowed by one alter type of card, but But it depends.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that makes more sense to me. All right, we have Rishadan Dockhand.
Oh man. This card, I put this card on my list as I think this card is the single best card spoiled so far for Legacy.
I don't see
that is
why.
That's interesting. Explain to me why you think it's the best card for Legacy.
What better one drop in Legacy do you have? As a merfolk.
Okay, so if you're talking about a revival of a certain deck, sure.
Yeah,
that's where I could see.
I think this brings more.
I still think the first catcher is just strictly better.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Chris Catcher was back when there wasn't 1,000 planeswalkers,
right?
Artifacts running around. Yeah. Now that they're all over the place. They're just nowhere near. Like,
I feel like if it's not turn one you're playing this, like, it just becomes worse and worse. And like turn one in Merfolk is when you want to play Aether Vial.
I mean, this is still
so
like
you can play your land port followed up by a wasteland and keep them off of like doing something.
This does exactly what you want wasteland to do. This is just restriction port.
Yeah, so it has a split to it, right?
Like
this
will definitely see play in Legacy Merfolk. Whether it'll bring it back on the map, someone will do it, and it'll see some result.
Sure.
I think it'll do good in Modern, too.
My issue with it is, when we're talking about Legacy Merfolk, they're already playing things like Rashad and Port, right? Because they're kind of like a tax deck, but they're not the white tax deck. And so a lot of the times they're playing like their anthems and their taxing effects already from like their lands. So I don't see it being a strong enough card because you have to spend the extra one mana with the creature on the next turn.
I guess the way I'm looking at this is if we were to create a 75 card list with Merfolk, do you just replace Curse Catcher with this card or you play them alongside one another, or what do you have to replace to get this in there?
I think you could find spots for Curse Catcher with this spot in both Legacy and Modern.
Yeah.
I mean, Curse Catcher is probably much more playable in Legacy than Modern, but I definitely think this card will see it'll whether or not it's like a 1-2 of even, like I think this card definitely will see play, and it'll put it's a definitely a like a bone to the Merfolk players, because like which haven't gotten
sure.
They've definitely been pushed out of the format in both Modern and Legacy, and like I think this card will definitely do well and above what we expected to.
Yeah, Jumpstart didn't do shit for Merfolk it hooked up goblins and elves really really nicely, and Merfolk was kind of just thrown to the wayside for the spirits or whatever nonsense in there.
Rishadin Port's not Rishadin, is not in Modern right now, right?
The lineup. No.
Nope.
So like this is putting Rishadin Port into Modern in the form of a creature for the Merfolk deck, right? So like we can see how effective that might be in Modern by looking at the Merfolk deck.
So it's hard to look at the card because one, it's creature, so it's gonna just draw removal if they need their mana, and two, it doesn't do it the turn it comes into play. Shadow Port happens immediately. You have to wait a turn cycle for it. And yes, you can Aether Vial it in.
That.
So like if you just did it right away, it's not like Rashadin Port's like, okay, I wastelanded you. I played, you know, a Rashadin Port and I get your remaining land. If you like take that same scenario, but you can play this card and they still get that land to ponder, brainstorm in Legacy or in Modern, you have removal for it. So it's a little bit different. The fact that it just randomly has Island Walk is nice, but you're in this spot where it's like, well, do you want to attack with it? Do you want to like do that? And with Murph, like you really don't want to give your opponent time to kind of draw out of it. It's just like the same with Death and Taxes. You kind of want to tax them out of the game, but you only really have a small window, about 5, maybe 6 turns before they'll just eventually draw a stupid planeswalker to get right back into the game.
Right.
This is a very interesting card. I could totally see it seeing some play in Modern Merfolk, but not in Legacy. Because I can see where Modern Merfolk might want a little bit more action to slow down their opponent while they do like vile things, and so I could totally see it there.
That's a very good way to look at it.
Yeah,
I agree. It might see play in Modern. I just think in Legacy, I'd rather just stick to the Rashadin Ports I already have.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can play them both at the same time. Yeah, it's just
a matter. I think I could see it as like a 1 or a 2, but I don't think it's ever like a 4 of in Legacy.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
On to the next one. Usury Fortune's Flame.
This is an EDH card, and JB does not play EDH, but he loves this card.
Oh,
I do like this card a lot.
I love it a lot because I occasionally like to play garbage decks like Hallowed One. I like random effects like this every once in a while because you just get the salt out of people when it goes your way. You know, people just get really upset across the table, and I enjoy that.
What happens if you look for coin flips on, like, MTG Top 8? Do you get anything?
Zero. Like, I think it's zero. You definitely get it. There's, like, you have that card from Commander. Was it Crux? You have Crux Throne, whatever, that card that lets you double up on your coin flips.
Right. I played that EDH deck with the two Commander partners.
Yep. And then they also spoiled an enchantment that if you win 10 coin flips in a game, you win the game.
And I saw
that's like wait, a, what? That's a reprint. That's a reprint.
I did not know that was a reprint.
That's a reprint.
So that plus the thumb, you can like, once win, lucky, you just win 10 in a row.
it's like called Lucky or Chance Encounter, I think the card is called.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I played the coin flip deck, so I had all the coin flip cards. It's fun. It's like a novelty. It's much better EDH runs. It's not going to do anything in any like 60 card format.
If you play this card, you have to play the original Ralzeric, don't you? Just because like it flips coins.
Yeah, you just want as many. Well, you want that plus the enchantment to just beat people by winning coin flips.
Yep.
Or be angry that you didn't win through coin flips.
No, the best card
is we build this for modern, right?
The blue partner dude that every time you flip a coin, if you win it, you draw a card. That's the best card that pair with this guy.
I'm not even thinking about EDH. I'm just thinking about this taking this to an FNM and seeing
and
if
play
I can
modern with this.
Yeah, and see if I can win a game or a match and make someone the saltiest they've ever been when I flip five.
If you just
heads.
Run every coin flip card and then run every free counter spell you can.
Here's a question: is this Modern Horizons 2 or is this Commander Legends 2?
It's definitely a mix, that's for sure.
Yeah.
It's so weird. Like Modern Horizons, the first one, like cards that weren't really they were like Urza. It's like one of the best EDH commanders, right? But that card's also just a bomb.
Oh,
like
that card's dumb.
Yeah.
That card shouldn't have. They like someone okayed a lot of things on that card.
Yeah, it's definitely pushed.
Right.
On to the next one.
I approve of coin flips.
So I picked Void Mirror.
I don't know how to feel about this card. This card kind of scares me.
A lot of the initial reaction with this card, I think people were like, F Tron, we're going to blow up like we got Tron. And then,
no
like,
one cares about Tron.
Well, it's, even then, like, you can also just play a forest and pay a green for your Karn, and then it comes in.
Yep.
Right.
I didn't know. Like, everybody's like, oh man, we got him. It's like, okay, well, not really. Like, it affects specifically Eldrazi Tron, just the pure, no colored one. Like, that's a great card against it. But. It's there to stop like all your free spells. So it's supposed to stop like Force of Vigor, Force of Negation.
It stops counter spells.
It scares me as like, well, I guess like anytime.
Fire Blast. Like it's got a lot of applications.
It's definitely an auto include in like every EDH, I think.
Yeah.
Auto includes a hard.
Or not auto include. I think a lot, I should say. Because I feel like, but at least CEDH, I feel like they play a lot of free spells.
If you're playing CEDH stacks, I would play this.
Yeah.
But, like, I wouldn't put this in, like, my Yuriko deck or whatever.
So I see this card's power level being with, like, Karn the Great Creator. It's just one of your silver bullets in your sideboard.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where the card's powerful.
I think this card's... I would rather just play Damping Sphere.
If you're talking about trying to beat, like, Tron decks, yeah. I'm just saying, like, the decks that would be playing Karn the Great Creator, you could bring this in against... I'm trying to think of, like Storm decks. Even though they would have an ability to get rid of that.
No, because those are copies with Storm,
okay,
right?
Okay, that's correct. I'm trying to think. Well, I'm just trying to think of like all their free spells that they play. I guess it's not. I mean, it does stop at Lion's Eye Diamond. Like, you can't cast that card.
If I was playing like Show and Tell, if I was a combo deck and in Legacy, I would put this in my sideboard. Like, if I was playing Show and Tell, this would be an okay sideboard piece.
So that's where I was thinking in my lands deck. You know, I already play Sphere of Resistance, which is a taxing card that also is there to stop free spells. And
right, that's I was going to say, that's like I would probably argue this over Sphere of Resistance.
So I kept on thinking about it, and I think I'm going to keep Sphere in terms of that for my sideboard, purely because this does not stop Brainstorm, Ponder, or any of the other one mana spells that are really, really good for just drawing a bunch of cards or doing, you know, like manipulating the deck. So I don't think, I think I would rather you could cast those spells, but it takes you an extra turn. And I don't mind, I don't mind making a, you know, combo player have to pay one for their Lion's Eye Diamond versus it not working against their Ponders.
Right. I do think, argument in like is very good in your deck. I think, and in a like pure combo deck, so like a Reanimator deck or like a Show and Tell deck where it's like really like AB combo and you like a counterspell ruins your day. I think this is a very good
protection.
Yeah, I didn't think about it that way. It's another way. I mean, most of the time you're going to be playing Defense Grid,
I
which
was about
also
to say,
costs two.
defense like, is a better exists. Option.
It's weird. I mean, it's better and worse at the same time. Like, let's say they have the mana. Like, okay, great. But it's I don't know. This card is it's for something. I just don't know where.
And defense grid's only on your opponent's turn, right?
No, I think defense grid is both ways. So if it's your turn, your opponent's cards cost three more. When it's their turn, your cards cost three more. I'm not mistaken, but I think that's what defense grid is. So if it's your opponent's turn, it works against you. If it's their turn, it works against them.
Right.
Or sorry, the inverse of what I said. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe this card sees play, but I only see it as like a silver bullet package with Karn, like Karn the Great Creator decks. I mean, at some point, those Karn the Great Creator decks are going to end up with 15 silver bullets. Right. Right now they play like nine already.
It's already 15.
So my last choice is Karth the Lion, and I purely picked it because I thought it was interesting that we finally have a card that messes with a Planeswalker's loyalty abilities, like how they activate. So this is like, I think, the first time we've seen something reference the actual tick up, tick down.
That templating gets the okay emoji from me. It's woo! It's cool. Perfect.
I mean, I don't think it's anything great, but I just thought it was interesting that we finally have a card that messes with the abilities on a Planeswalker.
Like actually the numbers. Yeah.
Yep.
I was gonna say, didn't we have that one white creature that said Planeswalker abilities cost one more to activate?
That was like the Eidolon from Theros, the newest Theros or whatever. Yeah, that one, they actually have to pay mana to do.
Yeah, not the actual like cost. Yeah. Where
this one makes Jace Brainstorm plus one. Ever think about that one, guys? Boom.
Oh my god.
They're a bounce with Jace. It's zero.
So. Would this ever see play? I know not in Legacy, but in Modern, is there a space for something that really wants to dig for Planeswalkers?
Multi, like mid-range or control.
What's really dumb with it, you have to break it. If you're not trying to break Modern, you're doing it wrong.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know.
What's one of the Planeswalkers that only has a...
Maybe does it work with Narset? I mean, you can use Narset four more times, right? It goes minus one instead of minus two. So you can use Narset. Well, I'd like to see the ruling on this card when it comes out in Gatherer or what they say. Because what if my Narset's minus two and it's only got one loyalty? Am I able to activate it? Because does this change that?
That's a very interesting way to think about it.
Dude, are you telling me I should play Mill with, what's the one that
Ashiok?
Yeah. Just play Ashiok for free.
Zero.
Right. That Ashiok,
it could do that.
That Ashiok is really good in Modern.
That's fantastic. I play
in Legacy.
Yeah, I play a few. When I'm playing Snapcaster decks, I see people like to play like Rest in Peace. I typically don't like playing Rest in Peace with my Snapcasters. I absolutely hate it. So I usually go for the surgical option. And if like the format's more fair, I would go with Ashiok.
The first time you forget to sideboard out your Snapcasters once you bring Rest in Peace in, you'll never forget after.
I just don't play Rest in Peace with those cards. That card is Rest in Peace is like made for like Death and Taxes to deal with graveyard decks, not for Snapcaster decks. It's like, oh, I'm playing four Snapcaster and I'm bringing in two Rest in Peace. This kind of sucks.
Right. I love the flavor of this card.
Yeah, it's dope.
All right, so Jeff's first choice is that Glimmer Wasp.
Zabaz the Glimmer Wasp.
There's someone, I remember the first time I heard someone read it, they were like, there's a tongue twister.
Yeah, it's actually kind of tough. But
hardened scale mana artifact.
Yeah, so the reason I picked this card was just Ravager decks haven't been a thing for a while. They were kind of like beat out of the format. They weren't good enough. But is this card good enough to revive it?
I saw a meme of that was like Ravager after its fourth printing in a year and a Mox Opal ban, and it's like a horse being beaten to death.
It's true. I mean, I agree, but like this card is very strong, I feel.
My problem is the reason that deck isn't good anymore is because it doesn't have the fast free mana to go wild with everything.
It seems too fair.
It's not a piece that's missing, it's the mana acceleration.
This is true. They don't have a lot of artifact lands.
And this card has a specific wording as well. It's specifically if modular was triggered. So let's pretend that you were to put all your counters onto a Blink Moth or an Ink Moth Nexus. Well, you know, there's a way to like move those counters from there, which I think sometimes they play with the Ozolith or whatever that card is from.
Yeah.
Ikoria, that this card doesn't trigger. It's specifically that one ability. So how many modular cards actually exist? So it's probably this card, Arcbound Worker, yeah, Ravager.
Ravager. Right, that's it.
So you got 12. I'm sure there's other modular cards. I just don't know if they're good.
Right.
For sure.
There was a new one that got printed last year. Or last
time.
Well,
there's some in the new set, too.
Right, we'll have to see.
Jeff's next choice is...
Oh, I'm so hyped about this
card. How did no one talk about this at first when this card got spoiled?
Well,
but when I think of Storm,
Aviv Progenitor Ooze, it costs 2 colorless and 3 green. It's a legendary creature Ooze with Storm, and
it's not legendary if it's a token.
Yeah, if it's a token, it's not legendary. So that means for every copy that's created, it will not kill itself. And then it comes into the battlefield with +1/+1 counters for each ooze you control.
This card is people are going to learn how the stack works.
Well, yeah, the first one's a 2/2, the second one's a 3/3, the third one's a 4/4, and it just kind of goes up like that. So I'm looking at this card as, is this better than Empty the Warrants?
I was literally going to say that. Is the one extra mana worth it?
Well, it's double green, which is difficult.
Triple green.
Well, I'm saying so it's 3 green and 2, but the Empty the Warrens is red into 3, yeah. So it's real easy to get to.
I think Wizards is going to regret putting all these Storm cards into Modern.
I hate Storm as a mechanic, that's just me. But...
Right.
I feel like this card has a lot less need for a high Storm count to win. But the problem is it too slow? Because this just, if your opponent has a board wiper, same thing for Empty the Warrens, obviously, but...
What's the best play in Modern is, Utopia, or Arbor Elf Utopia Sprawl. You get 5 mana on turn 2. You get this.
I think when I'm thinking of this card, I think Wizards is trying to move Storm out of blue-red and maybe kind of going to other colors. But the problem is all the, this is being triple green, your Pyretic Rituals or your Desperate Rituals make triple red. And those are hard to convert with just a single Mana Morpho. So you can do a Mana Morpho to turn them into 2 greens. Well, you're still short, a green to cast this card. So I think it's kind of fair in that aspect, but it's so difficult to determine because what would a red-green Storm deck look like?
Can't you just play, those bad artifacts, Prismatic, whatever?
Yeah, but then you're playing a bunch of bad cards.
You can play cards like Wild Cantor, card. Like, you have those, so you can go into this archetype, because I think red-green has been, destined to have mana dorks. You could do, Burning Tree Emissary and things like that. So I think what they're trying to make is, a Wild Cantor deck into Burning Emissary with Mana Morphos in some way to concoct. You casted this, 4 spells, you now have your 5 mana for it, play this card, and now you also, next turn you're going to have them dead. Similar to, what Empty the Warrens does.
See, and I guess I'm okay with it, because when you look at something that's got blue in it, you get to draw a bunch of cards while doing all that, whereas you have to have a hand that's set up to do this, and then it's kind of done when you're done.
I don't know enough about Modern, but I know that they're going to regret putting this card in the Modern.
I also think it goes with another card that I put on my list pretty well, I think.
It's hard to say, but yeah, we can go on to the next card. But this card, it's triple green, makes me adverse to it versus all the other Storm cards are single color.
All right. So next we got Unmarked Grave. It's a 1 and a black. It's a sorcery. Search your library for a non-legendary card. Put that card into your graveyard and then shuffle.
Well, how do you abuse this card? What's the first card you get?
That's why I wanted to talk about this card. I feel like this card has potential. I just don't know where.
Sundering Titan.
Thunder Titan is the big one. They printed that anti-humans card that just completely hoses humans, the angel.
The one where you pick a type.
Creature type. You and your creatures have protection from that creature type. So they can't reflect or mage. They can't do anything to it.
That's legendary, isn't it? You can't do that.
No, it's not.
It's not. It's on my list, actually.
Yeah.
It's not legendary?
Exactly.
No, it's 3 white, 4 flying, 7/7. Yeah. Enters the battlefield, choose a creature type, and then protection. But... Yeah.
What? So with Unmarked Grave, it's a weird one. I thought that card was legendary too, and then when I found out it wasn't, I was like, okay, so they clearly want this to be able to grab, anti. They made sure that in Modern that you can't just go grab Grizzlebrand or even Emrakul, and then with Emrakul's trigger on the stack, you can then Goryeo's Vengeance. They made sure that it wasn't an option.
Mm-hmm.
So now everybody's kind of searching, Gather or Scryfall for the next best thing to do with this. And this can also grab Unburial Rites or cards that have reanimation effects. So I don't know exactly where it goes. It's confusing.
Here's a question. I don't know if Elves is still good in Modern or ever was, but isn't Elves green black? Doesn't Lister Scrab Craterhoof if it dies? or get sent to the graveyard. Can't you just reanimate it faster that way?
What would you reanimate with?
I guess that's true.
Mm-hmm. Like that's where we're at with the format. It's like how bad
can we put a Sundering Titan in?
Wait, the isn't there that white reanimated return target creature from your graveyard to the battlefield? Oh, that's I guess yeah. four.
So why like those cards are like this style of deck so good in Legacies? Because you can do it off 1 mana to 2 mana with either one reanimate, take the damage off the front, or do it animate dead with just 2 mana. So you have like those two spells that are so cheap and efficient, mm-hmm. along with Entomb. This, obviously, they wanted to slow it down for modern purposes. And then right now, I don't think there exists a reanimation spell that is strong enough currently.
Yeah, and they didn't want you to be able to, and that's why Tony said that they didn't want you to be able to grab a legendary creature just to make sure that it didn't pair with Gorya's Vengeance.
Gorya's Vengeance, yeah.
Yeah, that would be obnoxious.
Yeah, it'd be super easy just to be like, turn three, I have... Well, I guess you kind of you can do that now too, but it's a little tougher.
This would make it more consistent.
Yeah,
for sure.
That's a weird one. I'd like to see what you can do with it, but right now I don't see anything.
Mm-hmm. Oh man, this card.
This card came late in the day.
So we got Gaia's Will. It is a
green Yawgmoth's Will.
Yeah. It's a suspend 4 for 1 green. Until end of turn, you may play lands and cast spells from your graveyard. If a card would be put into your graveyard from anywhere, exile that card instead.
This turn, yep.
It's Yawgmoth's Will, but like better.
This is also going to be regretted putting into modern.
Just I'm with you on that too. As foretold, all the way.
Like, well, as foretold is great with this card because you can, you know, you can just like not like, oh, I'm gonna do this next turn. But what are you gonna do with as foretold? Like, I guess you have to construct a deck that's gonna be able to use this. And why Yawgmoth's Will is so fantastic in like older formats is because you have Moxes and again free mana. So this might actually be a much not as good as the modern. Might be insane in Legacy.
That's what I was thinking too.
That's where I think this card might be.
The only thing I could think of in modern.
Just cascade into this.
You can't.
But that doesn't seem like it gets you anywhere.
Where the power of this card comes is being able to, before it comes off suspend, or let's say if you're playing As Foretold, right? If you play As Foretold, you have the ability to brain freeze yourself before this card does its thing. Brain freeze the hell out of yourself, then just combo. It's going to be like Underworld Breach. It has that potential, though it's a two-card combo rather than just a singleton combo. But, I mean, and they don't go back in there, so you're going to have to find multiple brain freezes. So you can't just go a singleton brain freeze in your deck and just go off. You're going to have to play three of them. But you do it twice, or you brain freeze yourself one time, and then you're like, I'll just throw the other two at you and mill you out.
Yep.
Do you guys remember the Kethis deck in Historic?
That was the Abzan dude.
Yeah. Yeah, the one that you could play a legendary from your graveyard, right?
Yeah, and you essentially just got to play all the Mox Ambers you could ever want and just make infinite mana with it or whatever. Or maybe not infinite, but there was like some way to manipulate it where you could just get lots of mana. I could see some weird bullshit coming out of this card with that kind of setup.
Well, I mean, they get exiled, so like that definitely like does make a difference.
Yeah, for sure.
Because like with him, like the whole reason it worked is you were looping those Mox Ambers, because with the blue creature that whenever you play a historic or
you mill.
Yeah, you mill.
Yep.
Okay.
You can't really do that with this.
Yeah, I guess I wasn't.
I guess that was the issue with Underworld Breach, is it was you were able to just fill your graveyard for it, like, but this card you can't do that. You have to have a pre-existing graveyard. So is it gonna get played in modern? Probably not, but maybe in Legacy, where like you could already have LEDs and maybe Emerys that are already existed. But then what does the deck look like? And if you this is coming off suspend, your opponent can see it. So I do think this card's really strong. I just again let the internet figure this out.
Right. Agreed. I have no idea how to do it, but
it's gonna happen.
It'll be regretted.
All right. So next we have Sarah's Emissary. It's 4 generic mana and 3 white for a creature, an angel. It has flying, and its text is, as Sarah's Emissary enters the battlefield, choose a card type. You and creatures you control have protection from the chosen card type.
I did not realize this is not legendary.
Card type.
Huh. Yeah, you guys kept on saying creature type, and I got really confused.
I'm sorry, I read that wrong.
I just kept saying name creature. I knew card type from the beginning. I did not know.
Yeah, my bad.
You name creature.
Or you name instant so it doesn't die.
But doesn't like elves already play like that Archon that you name and then like players can't play sorceries or instants. Isn't that just like another version of this card?
There's a card that... What card are you talking about?
There's a card from like a Plane Chase set, which is white, 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 green, green, green. Archon of something. I forget his name, but it's like a flying guy. When it comes into play, you name a type and neither player can play that card type.
I think you can only pick like instant or sorcery, though, I thought.
I think it's, either way, it might just be instant or sorcery, but that card obviously works with natural order because it's a randomly green card, and that's how you get like your another way instead of just like, oh, I don't have enough creatures for Creative Hoof. Well, I'll lock you out of your instance, which is, you know, 60% of your damn deck.
Mm-hmm. This was a card I thought might see play with the Entomb card we were just talking about. This
really weird that you get, yeah, it's weird that you get the protection too, so you can get protections from like instant spells. Like, yeah, it's interesting.
I mean, if you're fast enough, this definitely stops burn.
This card I think this card will be find its home in Modern. This is better than I thought it was.
In this card, when I'm thinking about it, it's like, so Iona is a card that exists, and you can reanimate that off Goryeo's Vengeance. What makes this card better than Iona? Like, what matchups would you want this against, and why would you want it against that matchup?
I guess it's are we talking about what format? Because I feel like because you have Goryeo's Vengeance.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, specifically in Modern, and then obviously in Legacy, you can get more Degenerate because you have better reanimation spells. But in Modern, like, what matchup would you want this in currently?
Just an EDH card, but...
It could be.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I never really thought about that's why I play this and not just play Iona.
Maybe that's why they didn't make it Legendary, because that would be an obnoxious general.
Yeah, sure.
Iona shouldn't be banned in EDH, but that's a whole nother topic.
We could make the ban list one day.
All right. Hey, this is my list. We talked about this
card. So
we're on
Josh's list. We have Rashad and Dokkan. Already talked about it off of my list. So we're just going to skip past it. Next up is Chatterstorm. It's a one colorless and a green for a sorcery that creates a 1/1 green squirrel token, and it has Storm.
The ooze hadn't, or I missed the ooze before I submitted my list, but this card was on it, and I was like, well, Storm cards are like obviously scary to put into any format. Mm-hmm. I think this will see play in both Legacy and Modern.
It's cheaper too, so if you think of Tony's scenario where you're going, what's the stupid
Burning Tree, Chatterstorm. You have five 1/1s.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's great, but there's definitely a possibility to just flood the board.
Big board. I mean, that's 13 damage. That's a 2-turn clock.
Mm-hmm. Maybe this card's abysmal.
Let's think about with the new. I like this card.
I believe you do. That's why you put it on your list.
Right.
I do think Empty the Warrens is better.
It is.
Right. No doubt.
Well, it's like how high does your storm count have to be for it to be fatal? And then at that point, why don't you just play Grapeshot and end it right there? Why
that's
put the creatures
on
the
play? Like how this isn't any. This is worse than Grapeshot, but
it's just for sure. Yeah, it's slower.
Like, Empty the Warrens is great because you're like, oh, crap, I'm sputtering here. I got 8 Storm. Well, cast it. Here's 18 1-1s. Hopefully that gets the job done. If you were to do the same with this card, you're like, okay, 8, you know, 1-1s. You're facing down a Batter Skull. It's like, oh, this is really, really bad. Like, oh, I attack with 8 guys, and I only get 3. Let's in the scenario that you have 9 guys. You attack with 9 guys. They gain 4 life. Only 4 gets through. And then they can attack. It just doesn't work in the way that you want it to.
How does this work in Modern, though?
Well, Modern has Empty the Warrens and Grapeshot, so it's like, I don't know where you're going from here. The Predator Ooze is like, you only have to storm 5 and you only have to get up to like storm 5 and you have lethal on board. This card, you have to storm 18, 19 to get lethal on the board, or, you know, sometimes 15, 14, depending on like what deck you're going against.
Right.
Whereas Empty the Warrens has like a storm 8, and like Grapeshot is a combo, more of a combo thing, just because you can get them for 9 with the first Grapeshot, and then you just pass in flames, gets the other one, since it's so cheap and you have so many ways to get so much mana. And again, this being in green, so the Pyretic Ritual and the Desperate Ritual is like mana, just usually you have like a surplus of red mana. You don't get a surplus of green mana. There's no way to get a surplus of green mana other than filtering, and that's just not going to play out well for you.
Right. Maybe I just have googly eyes for the squirrels.
I mean, everybody does. It's a huge... I think Deranged Hermit just went up to like $150 or something.
Oh my God.
It is also a reserve list, yeah.
Next is Grief. It's this 2 card. Colorless, 2 black.
All right, let's have the discussion.
Yeah, a creature elemental incarnation? Yeah. It has Menace, and when it enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals their hand. You choose a non-land card from it, and then they discard that, and it has Evoke, exile a black creature from your hand. And
black card.
Black card. Yeah, black card. Yeah.
All black card. My bad.
Yep. So there's a lot of hype around this card, and I see why people are hyped up about it, and it definitely has best case scenario mentality where it's like, man, you get to turn one this with Ephemerate and bam, you get your opponent so good. But don't know if that's enough.
And I think if you're going to talk about like turn one combos that'll really wreck people, it's like you're just going to play what's Unmask. That? No, the...
isn't this strictly, this is strictly better than Unmask, right?
Unmask, you can target yourself. Oh. That's like the only difference. That's like, it's minor, but I think there are scenarios with Unmask you can target yourself just in case you want to like put a reanimator target into the graveyard.
In like a if you're playing Unmask in a non-reanimator shell, you replace your Unmask with Grief.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Right.
How do you spell Ephemerate?
E-P-H.
Yeah, there you go. E-P-H. So you have the ability to go like these huge blowouts, right, with Ephemerate. And this is like the style deck. But what I need people to do before they just go, this is so insane, these two-card combos, because you can construct that with all of Magic's history. You can construct these awesome two-card combos, right? Right. I need to see the 60-card main deck that allows you to have enough black cards and Ephemerate in it to do this consistently. And when you don't have that, what does this card do for you?
Saf, for what it's worth, the other day on stream, he did it with the... There's a human in Standard right now that does like the same thing, and he did it on like turn 5. He like blinked it 3 times
on turn 5,
and he was like, this is what people are going to be doing on turn 1, and he like showing the value, and I was like, wow.
So my issue is,
I am sold on this card.
If you have some goofy combo, why the hell wouldn't you just want to do something like Neo form if you're trying to put together like 3 or 4 cards in your hand that do something ridiculous?
I think this brings a whole new deck to the like table. Like a black white.
I mean, you're still putting yourself at like
how many white cards?
Yeah.
How many white cards are you gonna play?
Ephemerate and the Charming Prince.
Okay.
Or Zap Charm. That's it.
So best case scenario, you
maybe
open...
and maybe that the Tide Hollow Sculler, depending on what the shell is looking like. I don't have the... I'd give me until the rest of this sets out, and then I'll build a set list, because I can't build a deck until the...
Right.
This card until the entire set out. Anyway, right. I'm sure you could build... I think a black-white deck emerges with this and Ephemerate.
So
at least in modern.
My problem with it is, all right, let's say you have Ephemerate, Grief, Thoughtseize, land in hand. That's what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 cards. So insert a black card to exile to this. So you go turn 1, discard or exile black card, evoke, hit their hand, Ephemerate, do it again. And then Thoughtseize next turn. Yeah, your opponent's down to 3 cards, but you're down to 2.
Well, no, it's actually much worse. Let me give it the scenario. It's 7 cards. So with Grief, you go land, go down to 6. Grief, minus card, go down to 4. Ephemerate, go down to 3 cards. You get the first card from your opponent, goes down to 6. Then they go down to 5, and then Ephemerate's on rebound. They draw, go up to 6 cards, play a land, they go down to 5. So, like, you're at the same parity of cards. It costed the same amount.
On the same other hand, your opponent doesn't keep anything less than 3 lands on, what, 70% of the time?
Sure. I mean, don't get me wrong. You can definitely... The games that you blow somebody out, it's going to feel real great. It's just when you... I don't know how much Jund you've ever played, but this card seems fair to me. And Jund...
Everyone who's a naysayer is like, I've tripled Thoughtseized in Jund plenty of times and lost, so I don't need to hear
All they have to do is draw a stupid Planeswalker. Like, oh, I play a Teferi, bounce that. I have a Planeswalker that you have to deal with on the board. Mm-hmm. Like, or like, oh, I randomly, like, even the blow-off potential, you're like, oh, I drew my Bolt. Play a land, go. You go to Ephemera, I bolt it. You're like,
again,
oh, shit.
That's my biggest problem.
Follow this up with Bob.
Yeah, that's fantastic. When you have the dream scenario, it's an awesome card. I don't disagree.
And if you want the dream scenario, why wouldn't you just go for a turn one win with Neoform?
Yeah.
Right.
Like, if that's what we're going,
I want to play green blue. I want to play black. I want to. Okay, I want to
see play, but I don't think it's that good.
I want to
play
take
a
your
worse
cards
version
away from you and put them in the graveyard and watch you struggle. And like, why do I play this game? Because
Shuffle doesn't exile, which is a huge factor in it. Like, if you take my spells and I'm playing a Snapcaster deck, I'll maybe get those spells back. Like,
right.
That's also a big thing. Whereas, like, this is being compared to Thoughtseize, and Thoughtseize is a 4/4 body. You can turn to it pretty consistently with Eldrazi Temples, which is just like real dumb, or in Legacy with, you know, City of Traders, Ancient Tomb. And the 4/4 body is significantly relevant. The 3/2 menace is like, okay, maybe it's okay, but imagine just like.
Nice the bolt.
Yeah. It's small. That's the problem. And you don't get to attack with it because you're ephemerating with it, so you're not actually taking anything from your opponent's life total. Now, if you follow it up with like this and a Thalia, then I think it's a lot better. But then your black density goes way down and your white density goes way up, and now you don't have the dream potentials. Because imagine stripping their hand and then following up with the tax effect. That's like the dream. That's, and I think that's better than Bob.
Right. That, and then, like, again, what following does your deck up look like? Valley is obviously because, you know, they're at the mercy at the top of their deck. You've just taken their three cards that they're going to be able to play anyway, so... Yep.
And now they have to pick whether to bolt the Thalia or bolt this.
Right, yeah. And that's where I can see that scenario happening. But again, you have to construct me a deck that's just like, okay, why don't you just play Elite Spellbinder or Aether Vial? It's probably way better.
Like, Comball.
Yeah. All right, we're on Verdant Command. This is a one green instant, choose two. So obviously it's one of those commands where you get to pick two different abilities, and the four abilities you get to choose from are target player creates two tapped 1/1 green squirrel tokens, counter target loyalty ability of a planeswalker, exile target card from a graveyard, and target player gains three life. I don't know if this card's good at all. I don't know why this is here.
I forgot. I forgot I put this on my list, and at the time I made my list, there was like much less options to choose from. what I was going for with this was like more so: are we going to get more than just one command? Are we going to get? Is this a cycle? Are we going to get new commands? Or are they going to?
That'd be pretty dope.
Yeah.
Are we going? Are they going to ley line us where like the blue one is going to be Cryptic Command, and then we get a new one for everyone else?
Yeah, the other four are Profane, Austere. I mean, Austere, he's playing like EDH, but the other four are just like heinously bad. And then Cryptic is like still seeing modern play, even though it's not a good card anymore.
I do like this in EDH though.
Yeah, it's cute.
Especially in the Squirrel deck.
Yeah, I mean that's.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, if we're talking like competitive EDH, unplayable. If we're talking like fun, this is a great card. I think it's
right.
All the Squirrel players right now, all those old Squirrel cards that existed
are going to be so much money. Mm-hmm.
This right. card, I do like.
So suspend. Next we have Suspend, which is a single blue mana. It's an instant, and it exiles target creature and puts two time counters on it. If it doesn't have Suspend, it gains Suspend.
I like this in my Delver decks.
I think it's good.
Especially, well, like I had a really good run with Mono Blue Delver, and I was playing like Vapor Snag and like Raven's Form towards the end there.
Yeah.
I wish I would have had this card, because like two turns is all I need.
Well, I'm thinking like when you're hitting Dark Depth tokens, right? You just exile right. it for a single blue. That's fantastic.
So
I'm thinking like actual like exiling something that's in my that's going to stop me from winning the game in the next.
Yeah. Legacy playable. Card. I think it's too slow and modern.
Yeah, it depends.
I feel like Legacy is too, like, is two turns is pretty fat or enough time to, like, kill someone. I mean, you kind of modern, obviously, but I feel like.
I think in that red blue, like, Blitz deck, it would be okay.
Maybe that's true, just to move something out of the way.
So, right? my problem with it in terms of Delver is that I would much rather just be paying the extra one to play Brazen Bower.
That's already in the deck.
I understand, but what I'm saying is. I feel like that's already enough of the effect that you want
from it.
That also
doesn't get rid of it. That also doesn't get rid of the threat. You know what?
They can cast the following turn. This is two turns.
When I Brazen Borrower Tony's Uro.
Yeah, it doesn't do anything. I mean, that's something. It stops you for a turn. But if you were to like suspend it, my Uro's gone for two turns. It's like I don't have that ability, and then I gotta kind of craft.
I get a chance to counter it too. I get a chance to counter it again too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think this card could spawn a new archetype. And it's going to be like a blue-white Aegis.
Or no, blue-red, like an aggro, like a very, very fast aggro deck.
Well, that's you could do that too. I think blue-red, well, when we get to my cards, I'll talk a little bit more about blue-red. But blue-white, the reason why is because of Lavinia, the 2/2.
Oh, I forgot about that card. That card's
you have that,
really good.
You have Teferi, so they can't come off. Those are the two.
Oh my god, that's so obnoxious. That's a better, in that instance, it's better than Swords of Plowshares.
It is. That's why I'm thinking, like, if that were to exist, because Path sucks to play in Modern, because you're like, okay, give him a land, you ramped him. But if you can find a way to make, like, that style of effect, where, you have a Teferi that exists, you have, well, three mana Teferi, you have the Lavinia, which is removal prone, but in a deck that could exist like that, I just can't, like, it's just so absurd to me. Like, the fact that you're just, like, one mana deal with your creature. And then it's not coming back. It's going to get countered. You have to deal with my threats, and then I'll just play, protect the queen or protect the king strategies.
I think this is very good in Modern, especially with... Oh, wait, Teferi is still legal in Modern, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yep.
Right, so, like, that Suspend 2 is perfect because even, like, you get...
You know, set up, yeah.
Right.
I mean, though, again, one of the issues with this card is doesn't hit Heliod, which is a big deal. So that kind of sucks, but it can hit the Spike Weaver. Because Heliod's is a poorly designed card. I hate those cards.
I think Heliod's got a short life.
I don't think it's going to get banned. And no. I don't think Not anytime soon.
Maybe not Heliod, then. Something from that deck gets banned, though.
We have a whole new cards coming in, and we're going to see new archetypes. Goblin Bombardment and other cards.
You're right.
We're just going to embarrass some of these, like, oh, you're going to play Llanowar Elves or an Arbor Elves? Well, I have Goblin Bombardment and Blood Gas. I'm going to start blowing everything up. Nice deck. We already talked about that one.
Yep.
Nailed that one. Classic card. A lot of the cards I picked are kind of like reprints. So Goblin Bombardment was once upon a time a legacy deck that was actually pretty good. And if you port that legacy deck into modern, you're missing Cabal Therapy and Faithless Looting, like, entirely.
So Goblin Bombardment is one and a red enchantment. Sacrifice a creature. Goblin Bombardment deals one damage to any target. So
I have a commander flood deck.
The board, shoot.
Secret commander.
Yeah, awesome with Korvald or whatever. It's fantastic in commander. It's, I mean, it was once a legacy playable deck, but this what I'm thinking is Zombie Innistrad. Yeah,
pre Innistrad.
Oh, it was
good. Like a little after Innistrad too.
Well, I played Gravecrawler.
Yeah.
And now you have Stitcher Supplier, which you can kind of put in there, find a way to mill. So you can Stitcher Supplier. You have Carrion Feeder that was printed in Modern Horizons 1. So, like, that deck, the original deck was Carrion Feeder, Goblin Bombardment, Blood Gas, and, like, Cabal Therapy, Thoughtseize, and Gravecrawler. And then, otherwise, the fact that Bridge from Below doesn't exist kind of makes me sad, because that would have been awesome to play with this card, along with this card. But
it's obnoxious. I'm okay.
We don't need Bridge.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably why they're not bringing Bridge back anytime soon, and it got axed a while back.
Well,
but this
when
card,
they did, Hogak took over the format.
Just, like, think of, like, a Mardu deck that's playing Stitcher Supplier, Lingering Souls, Bloodgast, Carrion Feeder, and Gravecrawler. So you just have an ability to just, like, snipe the board. And if, let's say, the Heliod combo gets really potent and really good, if you have Goblin Bombardment on the board with, like, four creatures, they can't ever combo off. The only downside is they have Auriok Champion, which has pro red and pro black, which is super annoying.
Can't you just, or do you run Mayhem Devil in this deck?
I would definitely try it.
Yeah, because that's two damage.
The problem was, like, why it's not existing, because they made a card called, like, Spire Barrage, which costed a red to do it every time. The fact that this is free to sack a creature is really powerful, and then Carrion Feeder can get out of hand, and now you have two sufficient, like, sack outlets that don't cost any mana that aren't, like, Nantuko Husk, which is just, like, a terrible card, or Bloodthrown Vampire. Those, like, horrible sack cards that only get, like, I only get this effect this turn.
This is also probably a well-received reprint, because it's, like, an $8 card for an uncommon, which is kind of...
Yeah, I mean, I'm all about this card. I love this card.
I don't think it needed to be printed at rare, but...
Who cares? I don't mind. It doesn't bother me.
I personally love Goblin Bombardment. If this brings back a red black like sacrifice deck for modern with Mayhem Devil and bad zombies, I'm all for it, because that's a Josh deck in the making.
I think it's good. I think there's gonna be a deck there, and it's gonna be like one of those decks that's like good in a position where it's like, oh, everybody's on these creature decks. I'm gonna bring these in.
Right.
All
right.
So now we have this cycle of these artifact lands that are indestructible.
Tony's
they
cheating.
Are...
I'm going to say that because he's bringing in 10 cards, not just one.
I did cheat. There's a cycle of them. Okay. Realistically, I think the best ones are going to be either Esper-style ones, so you can play with, like, Thopter Foundry decks, or just, like, straight blue-red where you're playing in Soul Artifact.
This is another thing that I think they're going to regret putting into Modern.
Well, it's going to get banned in Pauper today, so just so you know.
Right.
Like, this has got to be out of Pauper so fast.
Yeah.
Right. Same thing with that Squirrel Storm card. It's got to go out of Pauper too.
Probably. That's probably where it's going to be the best. Right. So this cycle of cards is interesting, because they also have a card lit in the set called, like, it's a sorcery for one and a blue, and it has overload for blue 4. It puts 4/1/1 counters onto a non-creature artifact. So yeah, now you have Ensoul Artifact and that sorcery that exists.
God, that's obnoxious.
So you can put those on your Darksteel Citadels, which are indestructible. You can put them on your Razortide, you know, whatever bridge or whatever colors you're going to be playing, probably blue-red, put those on there. They're also indestructible, so you really have to have Path or Bust or some kind of Teferi that bounce them. And the fact that if you're playing a bunch of these, you can just overload it and kind of just like Tezzeret kill them is pretty interesting. Now, to overload is going to cost you to tap some of those guys down, but again, these cards are indestructible, so you have infinite blockers against the rest of the format that are all ground creatures. The downside is these cards get hosed by Karn the Great Creator.
Oh, yeah.
it's a 0/0. It dies. Ugh, burnout.
Wow.
I like that.
Is that how it works? Even though it's indestructible, it just dies to state-based
effect. So it's a 0/0. Yeah. It has to go to the graveyard. Yeah, it's a strange one, but yeah, that's like if you were to target like a Darksteel Citadel, it dies because it's 0/0.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it's in the same sense using Liquid Metal
minus
coding.
Minus,
minus,
X,
minus,
minus,
minus, minus, yeah.
Yeah, minus X effects. Until it's indestructible. So I think that cycle might be strong. I don't know where it's going to be, but it could create a new archetype. Quarian Ranger, classic. This is a green for a 1/1 Elf Ranger. Return a forest to you control to its owner's hand. Untap target creature. Activate this only once per
this
turn.
This is also a mistake. Sure. This is better than Muxus.
Whoa.
I don't know about that, bro.
That was a hot take, but
they're close. But
this card is dumb. Like, as someone who's I punted like 6 times against this, I have nightmares against Quarian Ranger.
This card's great, but it's not as strong as like Wirewood Symbiote. Wirewood
Symbiote.
Wait,
no, I'm thinking Wirewood Symbiote. Yeah, this isn't good. No, this is okay. Never mind.
Yeah, this
okay.
just gets you to rebuy cards.
I thought this was Symbiote. No. Oh, this is nowhere near Symbiote.
Symbiote's absurd. This card is good. And I think it's like, if there are decks that are like Elvish Archdruid decks that are producing a lot of mana, this is where you want this card. But I don't know if the Elves archetype really exists like that now.
Yeah.
So let's give you 7 mana on turn 2 like, with Utopia Sprawl and Arbor Elf.
You can do that too. Yep. You have to return a forest, so you might have to return the only forest that's on the Utopia Sprawl, but yes.
But that's the one thing about Modern is that there's a lot more removal, I guess you could say, for cards like this. Because, like, you know, Bolt will do it, Fatal Push, which doesn't see as much play in, like, Legacy, where Quarian Ranger might show up, is played a lot more in Modern. So you'll have a lot more removal for cards like this.
It also allows, like, Quarian Ranger allows you to do a lot of stuff with, like, 2-land, 1-land hands, because you can return the forest and then play, like, tap, add the forest, return that forest, play it again, and then add more mana. So it kind of has, like, these weird interactions. And with Dryad Arbor, you're able to return Dryad Arbor.
Oof.
So you can block. I mean, that's like a losing scenario anyways, where you're blocking with your Dryad Arbor to then bounce back to your hand and then play it again the next turn. But still, that's still an option.
Mm-hmm. It's still kind of like a fog, but...
And it's untapped target creature. It's not Elf, so that's kind of a key thing. This could go into maybe a different type of Elf style deck. Maybe it's like Kiki Jiki tech. Maybe if you're like a red green Kiki Jiki, where you activate it, the response to the activation, you're like, okay, like Court of Calling, go get Quarian Ranger, untap Kiki Jiki, then infinite. Like, it has the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I just don't know if that has enough power on its own.
Okay, so
maybe
Tony's...
I thought that card was much.
Card I want to talk about. I thought somebody put Prismatic Ending on it. I think that card's phenomenal for all formats. But yeah, Kitchen Imp, again, one of those cards where it's a flying. It has the potential to be a 1-mana flyer, but Kitchen Imp is 3 and a black for a 2/2 flying haste, and then it has madness for a single black. So if there's a discard deck, maybe this card gets absurd.
Too bad we don't have Faithless Living.
Isn't like Uktabi Drake or something the same thing?
That has Echo. That's a green, and then it has Echo green one.
That's what it was.
Yeah, so Madness, you just get a 2/2 Flying Haster right away. So there's also a new... They also spoiled another card, which is, I think, better than Lava Axe, because it's, like, black. Either sacrifice a creature or discard a creature. Destroy a target creature or Planeswalker. But you can discard this to... So it's, like, a 2-mana 2/2 Flying Haste. So realistically, I don't know. Like, this could be played maybe with, like, a Liliana deck or, like, a Smallpox deck. That's where I could see this.
I love all the Asmor cards. That's like my favorite flavor of the set is all of these Asmor cards. This is perfect.
Yeah. So I think this card could see potential. I don't know. And then the last card, I didn't add it, but it's called Prismatic Ending. It's white.
I took it off my list for the green Yawgmoth's Will.
Yeah. So it's white and an X, and it has Converge. And then you can exile target permanent with X converted mana cost or less equal to... For example, if you play... Pay for a single white, you can exile anything that's 1 or less. That's a non-land permanent. If you pay white and a blue, you can exile things that are 2 or less or non-land permanents. But if you pay white, it's still only 1 because of Converge.
Interesting.
I don't know how I feel about it.
I think it's strong.
I think it's really good.
It gives you a lot more options, and it's a lot more flexible. Mm-hmm. It's anything. It's permanent, right?
Non-land permanent. But yeah, non-land. So you can hit... Yeah. You can, so for a single white...
Good stuff like Chalice of the Void. You can get that easily.
You can get around that for sure.
And there's a bunch of stuff in Legacy that I think it finds its place pretty easily.
For the Vial, I guess.
I mean, I can go through the list. So for a single mana, it can hit Delver, Aether Vial, Chalice of the Void if you pay an additional for X. It can hit Thalia for the same price of 2 because you can just converge for 1. Or you can announce X is 1 or X is 0. Then it gets plus because of Thalia. So you can still hit Thalia for 2, which is the same mark. Hits Renin 6 for 2.
Renin 6 is banned.
No, no, in modern it's not. Oh, okay. So like it's like I'm just saying like the amount of valid targets it has is a lot. It can also hit Arbor Elves. Like it's not a 4x card by any means. Like this isn't replacing Swords of Plowshares in Legacy or Path in Modern, but this is not a mono white card. It's designed to be in multicolor decks for obvious reasons. And then has the ability to just be versatile. So like blue white decks, for example, in like Legacy, they play Council's Judgment. And at one point that was specifically there to deal with True Name. True Name is nowhere near the powerhouse that it once was, especially with cards like Plague Engineer existing. So the numbers of that card just keep going down and down. But this gets to hit so many of those cards. Like you can hit Sphere of Resistance, for example, by announcing the spell for a white, and then you have to pay blue. The Converge is checked on a resolution.
Mm-hmm. That is sick.
So you have the ability to like, and don't get me wrong, you can add like a third color and then get up to three, and then three is kind of like, okay, this is like Council's Judgment where you start hitting like Liliana. But just even two mana, just to have a card that is so versatile and that works well with Snapcaster, to be able to rebuy just to hit like a lot of these problematic cards. You can even get Heliod if you get it up to three, which is huge. And then also the random things in those decks that are like the Arbor Elf. So I think this card has a real place. Mm-hmm. The downside is a sorcery. So people are like, this card sucks, it's a sorcery because you need to hold mana for counterspell. You don't play this as like a 4X. This is like a, oh, they played Ren and Six and I missed my counterspell. I have to get Ren and Six off the board.
This is a way to get out.
Yeah. Right.
And that's where I think that card is greatly designed. And like, again, you can hit Aether Bio, just all these problematic cards for like Esper style decks or even Maverick style decks. Like just anything in there. Like this doesn't go into mono white at all. But again, I don't know if the format's going to be okay with that, but just the versatility of it is just, I think, too high not to try like a one or two of them, any kind of blue, white. I mean, even in modern, you can play like a random Triome, right? You can play the Triome as red, and then just like one of your turns, get up to three mana, or even if you want to get crazier. Once you get to like the dream scenario, four and five, it's way worse.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But just a single white just to exile so many cards.
The 2-3 color decks definitely see a lot of, we'll see a lot of value from this.
And if we're talking vintage, it hits all the moxes.
This is true.
Also hits Sylvan Library, which is a huge problematic card for those decks.
Mm-hmm.
Like just, it just gets, I think it gets so much and people are just not seeing it because it's like, it's a sorcery, it sucks.
Yeah.
All right, so that's pretty much all the things we wanted to cover. There's more spoilers is coming out as we speak, so I guess we'll kind of wrap up a little bit more about spoilers next week of what we kind of talked about. I do have a question for you guys, and it's kind of like a multi-part question, and I kind of want to end with Tony's question of the week to you guys. So with Modern Horizons 2 coming out and Paper Magic kind of coming back to life in the next couple of weeks, what do you think is going to happen to the Modern Horizon 1 card prices?
Oh, I think they're going to skyrocket.
But they're all getting reprinted in Modern Horizons 2. All
not
the good
all
ones.
Of them.
All the good ones.
We have not. Urza?
Yeah, I was gonna say we haven't seen like any of the good mythics getting reprinted.
Yeah,
I think like anything that's getting reprinted, I think you'll be able to pick up like at a reasonable price.
But hold on, with the old border, these are getting reprinted at specifically a old border treatment, correct?
Right.
So they're gonna be super highly desired and really limited.
And yeah, Modern Horizons 1 old borders only come in collector.
But you're going to get people like not necessary. I'm going to get two more Force of Negations, but I know Force of Negations price is going to go down as soon as the set comes out.
Okay. I don't think it'll be a big drop. It might drop like maybe $5 or $10, but I don't think it's going to be.
It was $75 a week ago, and I bet they'll drop below 50 after the set comes out. Like regular ones.
Well, there's no more regular ones going into circulation other than the ones that people are trading up to the old border ones.
Yeah, right? It's exactly what's going to happen.
Sure, and then the people that have those that got traded into those will have two Force Negations for one, so they'll have the ones that they desire, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, so I don't know if that's the case because you're asking a lot of people to offload a mythic from, is it a mythic or is it rare? It was a rare. From a Modern Horizons one that is known as a legacy staple is like a one or two of a modern staple and also an EDH like right. Force of Will number two.
I think the price will go down.
It's connected
to the right, it already has dropped. It was $70 before and it's $50 again.
Okay, I mean, that's great. Now's a good time to pick them up and that's what I would do. I don't know. Where do you think it bottoms out at?
I'm hoping for $40, but like, don't take my judgment.
Yeah, it's already back up to 64.
Sure. We don't know how many of those other ones are going to be into circulation, and the collector boosters, you got to pay a pretty penny for those, man. Those
they're going to be like $40.
Right.
And then my second question is, where do you think fetches are going to bottom out at?
We're talking original versions, or at least the version.
The cheapest Scalding Tarn you can buy. What do you think that's going to bottom out at?
25.
I was going to say 30.
25 is a good price. I think that's probably where it's going to be.
Scalding Tarn is not the chase one anymore, though.
Well, Misty Rainforest, whatever you want to call it, or Windswept, whatever one. But it's not even that it's the Verdant. Chase one.
Verdants are more than Scalding Tarns.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Weatherbloom, you know, the black green deck is the deck right now.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. So it doesn't get the same treatment as like what Force of Negation gets, but it does get, you know, you can open these up in draft boosters, set boosters, and collector boosters, and you have three different versions coming out in this one set. You have the old border, which is going to be highly desired. You have like the full arts, which is highly desired, I guess. And then you have just the OG look. So there's a lot more coming into circulation, as well as people trading theirs, like that same argument with Force of Negation. People trading their Modern Masters 2 ones and their original Zendikar ones into whatever desired one there is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm hot for full art Scalding Tarns.
I mean, they also have like those. I mean, you have so many different arts of fetch lands now. You have the ones that came from that crappy secret layer. The secret layer one.
The Misty from that set is my favorite artwork in Magic, period.
That's fair. I just don't understand why that has the price tag. I mean, they're going to be doing that every year with every form of land, right?
Seb McKinnon is why. It's like the artist is why. There's a big cult following. It's not fans anymore. It's a cult.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's all I got. Does anybody want to sign us out with something?
It is Wednesday, my dudes.
Fuck Modern.
Nice.
Love Legacy.
I don't know. We'll see after this set comes out. I think Modern might be fun again.
Make sure you play some dope music for us. Ba-dum-bum. I guess.
All right, so here we got to address a little bit of sportsmanship that's going down in the community. I'm talking about a little overkill. I mean, you can only win a match once, right? But sometimes people just gotta let you know how they had you dead twice over.
Look at my pool.
How they had enough extra cards in their hand in their deck to just kill you all over again. Yeah, we got a name for that. We like to call it the still had all these, because you know, you send the hand and your opponent's like, yo, wait.